Welcome to Act 3, the podcast where we explore how to thoughtfully shape the rest of our lives. I'm your host, Kara Gray. This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my retirement coaching service where I help executives and professionals plan their Act 3. For more information, stay tuned until the end. Today, I welcome Alex Hayes Griffin to the podcast. After a geographically diverse banking career advising a high variety of companies and leaders across most sectors, Alex retired from banking in 2023 and now works as an independent trusted advisor to CEOs, founders, and senior leaders. He brings 25 years of global macro and markets experience, coupled with deep multi-sector experience and fluency in frontier technologies such as AI and blockchain. With a strong belief that only by listening and understanding deeply can an advisor provide tailored, actionable advice, he is also formally trained as a business and executive coach. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thanks for having me, Kara. It's great.
So I came across your blog somewhere, and I'm not exactly sure if I've stumbled across it on LinkedIn, or I might have asked ChatGPT-4 to find me some folks to interview. So I think that ChatGPT found you, actually. And I was intrigued by reading that after your banking career, you actually took 5 years to plan your next life of freedom and as an independent advisor. Most people that I come across are not so intentional about planning their next steps. So I'm very curious to chat with you. I always start with what life looked like during the bulk of your main career. So tell me about life in the banking industry.
Right. I think the best place to start, Cara, on that is, like, I think on my the note I wrote to my team when I left Citigroup, which was a great place to work, was that I had the best apprenticeship someone could wish for over 23 years. And so being a banker gave me an amazing set of skills. So I spent 23 years in three different regions. I started my career in London, spent 6 years in Hong Kong, had my kids there, traveled around Asia for that whole time. And then we were in Australia for 5 years, again, as a banker at Citigroup after I'd left my previous firm. And then we came back to the UK 8 years ago. And again, I spent time on a plane covering global clients in one of the big financial hubs. And my life, the way it looked, was long weeks, long days, great holidays, not great work-life balance, but making the most of time with the kids in school holidays and at Christmas. I was probably a top 1% passenger with three of the world's biggest airlines. So when I lived in Hong Kong, I had this status with Cathay Pacific, where you knew you were in the top 1%. I had the same card with Qantas when I lived in Australia. And when I came back to the UK, I've become a lifetime gold member in the UK with British Airways just after 5 or 6 years of being here. So a lot of travel, meeting some amazing, inspirational people, and really just going out into the world and helping big companies do some of their most strategic transactions. So raising billions of dollars of debt, raising billions of dollars of equity, and helping them fund and execute mergers and acquisitions across borders. So sitting on a trading floor, looking at six different Bloomberg screens, trying to work out how the price of gold and the price of oil and the interest rates and what's going on in the economy and markets all interconnected with each other, and trying to act as a trusted advisor to clients of the banks I worked for. So that was really what life looked like. Very fast paced, a lot of learning, very exciting. I'm very privileged and thankful for that time. It, as I said before, it was a great apprenticeship. And what I'm loving about my new independent life is there are ways for me to use those skills really impactfully. And it was the best training I could have wished for.
So tell me about the moment or moments when you realized that you wanted to transition out of banking and into this life of freedom.
Yeah, I think there's kind of the conscious moments and there's the subconscious, right? And I think the conscious moment was it took 5 years of planning, but the 5 years of planning was kind of trying to work out what the art of the possible was without a firm decision on timing or firm intent to actually pull the trigger. But I think where it became conscious was the beginning of 2022. I do remember this vividly. We'd just been through the annual compensation round, which you do at all the investment banks. And I'd kind of worked out that what I was being told about my career and the chances for growth wasn't really matching the numbers on the spreadsheet, so to speak. And I thought, wait a minute, this isn't all stacking up. I'm still super stressed. I'm working super hard. I remember coming home after a long day, a 12, 13-hour day on a Monday, and speaking to my wife before we went to bed. And I said, look, I'm not sure I can do this anymore. And I think it spooked my wife, Michaela, but I think I was just being honest and vulnerable with her. And that really was the cat. From then on in is when I really started to make this change with intention. And so that was like 2 years ago, roughly. And I spoke to my mentor over the next couple of days. And I think a really pivotal decision for me was my firm was very good at offering sabbaticals. So you had this chance to take a partially paid 6 month sabbatical. I was ready to do that. I spoke to my mentor and he said, look, you know, do you need the holiday, Alex? And I was like, I don't need the holiday. I just need to kind of decompress, get clarity, find purpose. He's like, look, don't be naive. You're in a fast paced, you know, investment banking industry. You're sending a very clear message, a very, you know, risky message by taking a sabbatical. So I'd suggest that be a bit smarter about it and go to business school. And I hadn't been to business school since I was an undergraduate at Leeds. And I started searching for courses and found an amazing program at Oxford Business School on campus that was available that summer. And I applied to it pretty immediately. And that was kind of, I think that was the moment where this all started to kind of come together. But it had been building. The subconscious bit of it to complete the answer is probably started when I turned 40 in 2018. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you reassess what priorities you've got in life and how fulfilled you are when you have these milestone birthdays. And I'm getting closer to the next one now. It's only 4.5 years away. And I think at that time, we'd just come back from this amazing trip around Italy with my kids. And I got a phone call from my boss back in London saying, look, somebody's left. We've got a promotion for you. And here's some new responsibilities. Here's an exciting challenge for you. And I remember not being as excited as I should have been about it. And I didn't know what that was. But from that point, I did start to do some discovery about what else is out there, what are the alternative paths. And I was more subconsciously ready to leave rather than consciously ready to leave, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Do you think that the pandemic had an effect on your decision or timing as well?
I think a lot of people reassess priorities. I was fortunate to have a lot more time with my children. I can think of a couple of firm ways it had an impact. So it definitely gave me the bandwidth to, you know, working from home, you get some time, you're not spending time commuting. You know, I worked pretty hard during the first year in particular of COVID. Was very stressful, but you did have time to educate yourself by listening to podcasts and reading in the evenings. And, you know, you've got more time on your hands. And so it gave me a lot more planning time to look at what was available away from banking. So that was a firm outcome of COVID that helped me. We also made a big change in that we bought a holiday property by the beach, which is now our only property in Cornwall, which is this beautiful coastal area of England, 5 hours from London. You know, we were living in an apartment in central London with no garden, two teenagers, two dogs. We weren't allowed to go to the park apart from once a day, you know, and we'd be caught by the police if we, you know, we're out there too long.
Right.
And we saw everyone else with a garden. So we went out there and we bought this house by the beach. And that's where I spent a big part of the second lockdown with my children. And it did make me reassess. I love being by the ocean. I really realized that's what I needed. And to have a home there and actually know that it was our forever home, that wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for COVID. Because with remote working, prior to COVID, it wasn't really possible to do an investment banking job remotely. You had to be in the office 5 days a week. It may go back there in the future, but my firm was quite good about letting you work up to 2 days a week from home. And so it was actually possible to buy a house quite far away from London and actually commute for 3 days a week and spend 4 days a week somewhere else. And so, like with a lot of people, it did give us more optionality the way we ran our life, even if I didn't leave my banking career. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes a ton of sense. In fact, I'm doing the work that I'm doing now as a result of like pandemic and rethinking, you know, what I want to do.
It's empowering, isn't it?
And realizing that I want to help other people like embrace this freedom. So yeah, it totally makes sense. So what were some of the biggest challenges that you've been facing during your transition and how have you overcome?
Yeah, so I think that what I'm realizing is I thought I was embarking on a career pivot and I realized I'm really reinventing my career, which is a complete change in identity or like a material one. And I think pivoting is hard enough and that is a change in identity, but just shaking off that identity that can be quite strong as a banker, has been quite uncomfortable, but very necessary.
Yep.
Also, not understanding this kind of messy middle between kind of one role and then the next kind of thing, particularly if it's a big change, and understanding that you can't shortcut that. You need to give it time. Like, I'm 6.5, 7 months into my transition. I'm feeling coming out the other end and getting a lot more clarity now. But I needed to go through that kind of winter of the development stage and kind of get into spring. And you can't, that winter, that darkness is quite fruitful in terms of self-learning, reflection. And that's, they just having the patience to go through that when there were big parts of my personality telling me, go get a job, like take a job. And I had approaches, and I got very close within a month of leaving where someone wanted to recruit me. And it just felt like a betrayal if I actually took the role, that I created this chance to create an independent path, like go on the journey, be patient, and, you know, kind of let the kind of emergent nature of this process kind of flow. That was difficult. It didn't come naturally. I've spent 23 years being in a very structured role, being very clear about identity. And I hadn't, there were a couple of books. One's called The Working Identity that I should have read before I left. And it really talked about this messy middle. That's where I got it from. And I've just finished a book called Transitions, which is wonderful. And it talks about this neutral stage between an end and a beginning and how important that neutral stage is. So I just didn't understand that. That's been really difficult. And then coupled with that, which really plays into the patient's point, is however much you position yourself financially, when you've been used to having a monthly salary, it's really hard giving that up. And I think there's Nassim Taleb that talks about the two most dangerous addictions in the world are heroin and a monthly salary. And I hadn't understood that comment until I don't have a monthly salary. And we saved up well, and my career was good to me, and we position ourselves to be able to make this change. But seeing your available liquidity that's kind of finite go down rather than up or stay stable, it's quite difficult. And so no matter how much you prepared for it, until you go through it, you don't realize how difficult it is. And it does play into this patience point, because you're like, I need to start kind of making traction here. Like, this is, you know, it's hard to be patient, but I, so far so good, and touch wood, I can keep going, and things are growing quite nicely now from a low base, and I'm confident we get to the right place, but it's not been easy.
Yeah. Everything always takes more time than we think it's going to. You learned a ton of new skills in a relatively short period of time. Tell us how you approached that learning process, and talk about all the different things. And also, I will link to your blog because it has an explanation there, but I'd love to hear it from you.
Yeah. So there's a few things I did when I came out. So I think I mentioned my time at business school earlier. So I did what was called the Advanced Management Leadership Program, Oxford. So 3 weeks on campus with some amazing people, and all from around the world. And that was the first time I discovered coaching. Hadn't really understood what coaching was. Didn't understand the contrast between mentoring and coaching. Mm. I actually think they're quite different. I think coaching is a real noble art and profession. I hadn't really got it. So I was lucky to have a coach on campus that was assigned to me as part of my course. And also I saw on campus the power of just getting people together to try and help them get through personal transformation. So that really inspired me to pursue the coaching. And I'd been looking at this coaching course with Mayla Campbell for, you know, since then. So for the year and a half before I left or so, and I just couldn't find the time to do it with my full-time work. But it was one of the first things I did as I was getting to leave, was kind of started that program. And so I'm 2/3 of the way through it. I've almost got all my coaching hours. So that was almost turnkey, ready to go. And I'm working with two other trainee coaches. I've got a tutor. I've actually got 6 coaching clients now. So I was really glad I had that to kind of focus on. So that was one thing. And I just really enjoy doing the work. I really enjoy seeing the results. I feel like I'm in flow when I'm coaching. You've got to be really present. And it's kind of really important because you're dealing with someone's career, life, business. So that was there. I had a kind of coach that I was working with myself going into this change. And we spent a lot of time trying to work out where my creativity, like I felt like there was latent creativity and entrepreneurialism in me. And I was trying to work out where that was and how it manifested itself. And I think my coach had taken me way back to when I was a kid and I used to do art and write stories. But you know, investment banking was creative in some senses, but you're not kind of doing a lot of art and you're not kind of writing a lot of stories. So I had to kind of discover that. So one thing I did was this amazing course a good friend put me onto called Ship 30 for 30, where you're forced to get uncomfortable. You're forced to write every day for 30 days and post on Twitter or LinkedIn, write an atomic essay or a tweet storm or thread. And so I did that for October, and it was really great in terms of working out, what do I enjoy writing? What do people read? Try and get product market fit on your creativity. And that really fed nicely into my journey in terms of, you know, what I'm going to focus on from a business point of view. And a lot of it's around personal development and technology and the coaching aspect as well. But the key thing on that course, Cara, is I think a lot of us have imposter syndrome issues and this fear of hitting publish every time you put something on LinkedIn or share it with the world. And that course, by doing it every day, just built muscles to, like, that never goes away, but feel a lot better about it. And, you know, I felt a lot better about posting things in LinkedIn in my own name, because that, when I was writing on this course, I was doing it anonymously for the psychological safety. So that's another thing I did. And a third thing that's really important to my journey is I've been really intrigued by technology. Mm-hmm. So I've been in blockchain for 7 years, you know, in my spare time, and I'm certified as a blockchain expert. So I hadn't done that before. And I've been intrigued by, from the minute I saw ChatGPT, and you mentioned it earlier, I've just been like so obsessed by the magic of what these things can do in terms of taking someone who's not necessarily tech fluent, allowing us to get the power of these massive models and kind of computing power that's out there in the cloud. And so I've spent probably 2 or 3 hours a day on average playing around with these models. And I felt really compelled to educate myself around that. And so I did a remote course last August, September, which was great. And I'm actually now in the middle of a postgraduate course at Oxford again on campus in artificial intelligence for business. And actually on the day I left my firm, I had a box full of 50 books by Reid Hoffman, who set up LinkedIn on AI. It's called Impromptu. It's a great introduction to how AI is going to change every sector in the world. And it's quite inspirational, quite positive. I bought 50 books and gave them to my team on the last day I left. And so I've kind of got a real sense. I've done a few personality tests, and one of my key kind of traits is being a growth seeker. I'm also an orchestrator, which kind of plays into this journey I'm on. And I think the third character trait was being an inspirer, but kind of growth, being a growth seeker has been a common pattern. Mm-hmm. And it really ties into this intellectual curiosity I've always had, just wanting to know more and go down the rabbit hole on things.
Yeah. I read that you simultaneously experienced financial and personal freedom while also experiencing a great deal of anxiety.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. And this is the stuff that I really love my listeners to hear, because none of this is easy. Huge changes and transitions like this are complex. So I would love to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I remember that blog post. I think I put it on LinkedIn. I didn't post much on LinkedIn immediately after leaving, but I think I put a picture from one of my favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption, with the blog. And there's this character there that has been in prison his whole life, and he gets out and you see the struggles he goes through on the other side. And I never really understood fluently understood what was happening to him. And I woke up one morning, I was in my beach house in Cornwall. My wife was in London with the kids, and I had a wonderful 2 or 3 days. And I woke up one morning, no alarm. And I just thought, like, what am I supposed to do today? Like, where's my structure? What's my purpose? Why do I exist? And kind of, realized I was missing the structure and almost the prison bars of being in a corporate role where you're told what to do. You know what your identity is. You know, it's almost like this tempting to want to go and rush into another prison just to get structure back.
Yes.
And in the movie, I think this character tries to get arrested so he can go back into jail because he misses being in jail. And I started to go, well, people don't realize that on the other side of the kind of corporate rat race is a really unstructured life. You know, it can be lonely, and you get anxiety from that. And so just be careful what you wish for, kind of. There's so many good things about it, but it comes, you know, there is a dark side to this path. It's not easy and it's quite lonely.
Yeah, for sure. Reflecting on your journey, how do you think you've changed personally? And I know it's just been a short period of time, but how do you see things changing?
Yeah, I think that I'm much more present Like, I appreciate the little things. Part of my journey this last 5 years has really been realizing that material things don't really fulfill you. It's actually personal connections, like meeting other human beings, meeting new people, the excitement of the new and emergent. And like, I maybe people think I'm crazy, but I stop and I look at trees and birds often now. And I would never have done that during my corporate career. And my kids and my wife may not tell you I'm the perfect listener, but I think I'm a much better listener. I have much better conversations with them. My relationships with my family have improved. I really care a lot more about my friendships. And it's just made me reassess my hierarchy of things that are important to me. Mm-hmm. And some of the many things I thought were important to me during my corporate career just aren't anymore. And so this journey, it's been humbling, but in a positive way. And it's made me really appreciate the simple things. And also, I think maybe the biggest change for me existentially has been learning to find, you know, ease in a risky and unstable situation, like learning to be emergent, learning to kind of let life unfold without a structure and actually living with that volatility and that emergent nature of life. It really, you know, being in walk into a glass tower regularly and having a monthly salary, it can be quite safe and, uh-huh. you know, comforting, and you come out of it. And it's hard to get used to, but now I'm getting used to it. Just not knowing how each day looks and not having a structure, it makes you feel alive.
Yes.
It makes you feel uncomfortable, but they're kind of two sides of the same coin, so to speak. So that's probably been the biggest change for me, is living with and embracing the discomfort of the uncertainty, and knowing that it can be exhilarating and inspiring and exciting. So, you know, there's no kind of shortcuts in life. You need to have the yin and the yang to things, really.
That's the truth. What advice do you have for other people as they are starting to think about making a change, approaching retirement, or maybe are in retirement and are just not feeling all this inspired about what they're doing?
Yeah, I think, it took me 3 years of proper planning and certainly 5 years of reflecting to make this change. Mm-hmm. And I almost made a big change a couple of years before I did leave banking during COVID. I got a job offer during COVID, something really interesting. I'd met this company over Zoom. I really wanted to do it. It was something outside banking around technology, very exciting, quite entrepreneurial. But, you know, I had some really heated discussions with my wife, and I realized that we weren't ready as a family. She wasn't ready. It was the wrong time for the kids. And I know now, if I look back, even if that had worked out financially and professionally, it would have put my family under too much pressure. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad I kind of listened to what my partner was saying and really held back from doing it. And I think that's a key part of it, is if you've got a life partner or husband or wife, and I had heard this from other people that refuse ahead of me, make sure they're ready for this journey. There's multiple people in this. Make sure, like, because it's going to be hard, and you need to know that you're both going into it willingly and with open eyes. And, you know, maybe there's more of a push and pull from one partner, but you need to have agreement and be on the same page to be ready for this. So I think that for me, the last thing you want to have is you're changing careers, making a big change, or changing the structure of your work, and it puts your main relationship at risk. So I'd say that's the number one piece of advice I would give. Yes. Yeah, so the second bit of the advice is for others is really to think about your financial capacity to make this change, and think about the runway you think you'll need, and maybe put some extra on top, because it's really been the hardest part of doing this. And to my point earlier, it can be quite hard mentally to not see the monthly salary going in. And I've read a lot about lots of people that have been on transitions, and there's quite a common pattern where people don't create enough runway. They find the financial pressure is too much. They panic and they go back to corporate world, and they lose several years of their life, because you get into a new job and suddenly you blink and it's been 3 to 5 years, and then you make the change you were trying to make. And so I think having that financial capacity is key. And for us and our situation, I was at business school in 22, as I mentioned, and I was talking to people about making a change, and it kept coming back to money. And I realized that my relationship with my finances was a key constraint, and we had two properties at the time. A big part of my ego from being in banking had been about buying a property in a prestigious city, so we had a nice flat in London, and I made the tough decision to sell that property. We rented in London before I left work. We still had a holiday property with the mortgage covered. It was gone. And that really allowed me to make this move and actually get out on my terms. And, you know, maybe I was giving forgoing dreams I'd had when I was younger about having, you know, multiple properties. But at the end of the day, it was a choice between fulfillment professionally and with my family versus having an empty property somewhere. And it felt like a weighing it up. It was pretty obvious that it was a sacrifice worth making to be able to make this change when I'm making it.
Yeah, for sure. So speaking of your wife, I know you've helped her with her business during this time too. And tell me about that. Something with dachshunds? Like, I have a friend who has a dachshund, so I'm going to definitely pass along her website to them. But tell me.
So she's got this wonderful business called Wondercoat. And it was a business that kind of was emergent pre-COVID and actually came to life during COVID. So we've had dachshunds our whole marriage. So we had one in Hong Kong. I'd promised the kids that we'd get two more dogs when we came back to London. So we ended up with three dachshunds when we came back to London in 2016. And we found that there weren't coats that fitted dachshunds, particularly in the winter. And we've been living in hot countries, so we didn't worry about coats when you live in Australia. It's hot enough. And so my wife's actually a product designer. That's her training. That was her degree.
Okay.
And she made the sacrifice to become a professional parent when we had kids and actually park her career. And so she was always looking for ways to get back into kind of the professional domain and what she wanted to do. And so she actually, because she couldn't find a coat she wanted, she started creating these coats and designing them and creating concepts. And she worked with a fashion house in London to do a prototype. And so she made the coats for our dogs. And people were asking her on walks, like, where did you get the coat? That's brilliant. And where do you do it? And she's like, wait a minute, I can make a business out of this. And that really, the light bulb went off. And I think I'm a co-founder, but really she does all the hard work. But I think I did inspire the name. We were talking about names in a pub and Wondercoat was, I think, my suggestion. And she's taken that business and she's sold coats all around the world. We get this lovely ping on the phone several times a day when she gets a sale, like, is it a new customer? Where are they? But she's a great advert, Cara, of, I don't know if you know this Japanese concept called Ikigai. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it, but I'm not terribly familiar.
It's basically a Venn diagram. And if you take the kind of circles, like put four circles on top of each other and there's a dot in the middle where they all overlay.
Yeah.
The four circles are what you love doing, what the world needs, what you can be rewarded for, and what you're good at. If you can find where those things align, you found your calling, where you can do something that you will love. And even if you don't get paid for it, you will be great at it. And, you know, you'll found your calling. And I've read that book, I think 20 years ago, and I've been searching for my Ikigai, and I'm much closer to it today. I don't think I've quite nailed it yet. But I think she's probably one of the people I've seen that's really nailed her Ikigai, because she really loves dogs. She's good at product design. Like, dachshunds are taking over the world.
They are.
And, you know, she can be rewarded for it. And so she started this business on Instagram. She's got no outlets, like, physically until now. And she's loving it. And it's been great. Like, we've got two kids. They're actually going to, my son graduates university goes to university and on his gap year in September, and my daughter's going to boarding school. And so there'll be two of us at home. I've got the startup of me. She's got the startup of her with her business. And I'm really glad for her that she's got this amazing business to focus on post the children growing up. And it sneaks up on you. And I think a lot of people at this phase of life have kids that are growing up and maturing. And it's about finding a calling for you and your partner. And I think great. And I've been consulting with her and her team. I did a strategy day for them in January. And, you know, I've really seen, our marriage has been strengthened by all this, but our working relationships have been enhanced as well. I've been able to help with the business. So, you know, it's a great business. Our dogs are just wonderful to be around. And if you go to our apartment, it's full of all these coats. And we have these VIP visits from customers. So if anyone has a dachshund, check out Wondercoat, because it's just this beautiful business with a growing tribe of dogs around the world.
Well, I can guarantee you, you're going to have a customer in Chicago, because my girlfriend and the dachshund loyalists, I mean, they're into it. So I will definitely pass along your website and also put it link in the show notes. But let's get back to your business. Tell me about your ideal client and where people can find you if they want some coaching from you.
Sure. So I'm about to launch my website. It's actually ahgxai.com. So the AI bit is really, I'm really into AI, but it's actually augmented intelligence, not artificial intelligence. So augmented is all about humans flourishing and doing better using technology. And I think about modern technology, I think about AI and other platforms that can help you be creative and flourish. But also you can be augmented by, you know, ancient wisdom. There's a lot of stuff out there, philosophy, spirituality that can actually augment your path as a human. And so augmented intelligence is a big thing to me. So that explains the URL. The webpage is going to describe what I do. And this is really what I've been trying to work on with my coach and the person who's been building my website. Is really my ideal client is someone who is looking to make a big change in their life or has a big challenge and they need help. And so I'm all about helping people. I'm all about helping them unlock hidden potential. And I found that the kind of unique fit I've got is the thing I really enjoyed about being a banker was being a trusted advisor to clients on some of their most tricky transactions, being really helpful and independent around a really complex situation. And what I'm finding is there's a lot of synergy between that and executive coaching. And so really what I'm looking to do is operate as a, you know, advisor and a coach and be someone who can flex my muscles both as a trusted advisor, if that's what someone needs, or as a executive coach, if that is what they need in that scenario, but also having the ability to be in the middle and flex between those. Because what I found is I work with a client on a coaching engagement that's running a business and they've got a fundraising to do or a piece of M&A and they actually need help on it and they need an independent advisor to help them on that. And I can actually roll my sleeves up and pivot away from being their coach to actually being their trusted advisor. And what I'm also finding, Cara, is I've got clients that come to me and say, look, I need you to advise me on this big trade we're doing or this big deal. And what I found out is actually there's other stuff going on in their life and in their company. And what they actually need for big parts of what they're challenged by right now is a coach, someone independent that can be a confidant that they can open up to, where there's a safe space to, where it's quite lonely at the top to deal with someone who's empathetic and has lived in the world and been in their shoes and can actually help them navigate that peer-to-peer, human-to-human. So I'm finding there's a lot of synergy between those two things. And so that's really what my website tries to describe.
Perfect. Well, Alex, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a really fun interview that I know my listeners are going to find valuable. So thanks. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time.
This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my retirement coaching firm. I help executives and professionals plan the non-financial part of their retirement, like how to discover new purpose and how you want to spend your time. I offer a one-on-one coaching retirement blueprint package where we work together to discover some new avenues of exploration for your Act 3. This coaching is completely custom and will provide you with a ton of resources and support as you transition to this new stage of life. For all the details, please go to goodmorningfreedom.com/services.